Hi, this is Phil Lairness, sitting alongside my wife, Lily Lairness. As we travel through the third decade of the 21st century, it's good to know that the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions continue to produce a minimum of 4 hours of weekly audio goodness on Siren Radio and southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. Why do you have that glazed expression on your face, Lil?
Too many numbers in that announcement.
Okay, so what should you actually have? Tea or milk in terms of your overall piece of work there? Should you actually go for milk first or tea? I don't know. Let's actually find out from Jane Pettigrew. Jane, what are your thoughts in terms of milk or tea? I mean, this is a huge debate that we've got here with this smile train debate.
I know, Alex. And I think what I'd like to say to people is that, you know, brew the tea however you like to make a decent cup of tea that you're going to enjoy. That is absolutely paramount. But there are little golden rules that we can follow that will perhaps make it even better. And to get the best out of your tea, the flavour, the aroma, the look of the liquor, the best thing to do is actually to just brew the tea on its own first. You start with some really good quality filtered water, which takes out all the chlorine, all the limescale, all the things that actually affect the tea for the worst. And you put that into a pot. You put the water ready. Sorry.
The excitement, Jane, is too much. You know.
I know. So many things to talk about here. So you want your water filtered because that's going to help you get the better taste out of the tea. Then you're either going to work with a teapot or a mug, and you're going to put the tea or the tea bag into the vessel you want to use. And then as the water comes up to near boiling, which is what we need for black tea that most of us drink, you're going to pour that onto the tea, and that heat of the water will get the leaves opening up, they will absorb water, and then they will give their lovely flavours and colour into the water. You then are going to leave that to brew for whatever time you like, longer or shorter. Some teas need about 4 minutes, some need a minute. And then you separate the leaf from the liquor. You take away the tea bag, you lift out the strainer or the infuser basket that's got the tea in it, and then the milk, the lemon, the sugar can be added if you want to use it. But what I'd say is it's actually worth trying the tea on its own first, because you may just find you like it rather than drowning out the wonderful natural flavour with milk and or sugar. Wow. So that's the ideal way round. But as I say, it's really important that people actually drink tea, enjoy tea the way they like it. And in this case, come together for the tea parties that are being encouraged through the month of April by the charity called Smile Train, which raises money to repair split lip and cleft that babies are sometimes born with. 1 in 700 babies are born with it. And the money raised by these tea parties going on through April go to Smile Train, and they will actually then be able to fund more of these operations. So it's a really good thing to be doing. It's good to drink tea anyway, but if there's an added advantage, like helping this amazing charity, that would be really, really great. And it's going on right through April.
Tremendous. Let's turn to Ian Valance, who, of course, is the director of Smile Train UK. And Ian, what's your position on this great tea debate? I mean,
Hi, Alex. Thanks so much for having us. Well, I mean, firstly, a full admission for me, I'm more of a tea drinker, more of a coffee drinker than a tea drinker. But I'm learning so much about it from Jane. I think I've been making it wrong. It's all about the teapot. I think it's all about the loose leaf as well. And there are teas out there who may appeal more to a coffee drinker. But I think what we've learned from the survey is a lot of people have got some, let's just say, interesting tea making habits. But of course, there was a very serious message behind it, but a bit of fun mixed in with that as well. So we at Smile Train, we are the world's largest cleft charity. So we're enabling free cleft surgery to anyone that needs it in countries around the world. We've done more than 1.5 free cleft surgery so far. So a cleft, as Jane has mentioned, is where the lip or the roof of the mouth don't form together properly. And that can affect 1 in 700 babies born around the world, including here in the UK, where, of course, we have our wonderful NHS, and that's all treated for free in countries where we work. So India, most of Southeast Asia, a lot of the African countries, we don't have the NHS equivalent, and you know, we help people who don't have the means to pay. But critically, we work with local medical partners and hospitals to make sure that they can have that surgery completely free. We can't do that without the help of our wonderful supporters here in the UK. So really, that's what today is about. We're launching our big Smarty party. People can go online. There's more information on smarttrain.org.uk/bigsmarttea party. All the information you'll need to have your very own tea party at home. Coffee is permitted, Jane tells me, but we're focusing about the tea. And people can donate.
Slippery slide though, Ian, when you actually start offering coffee as well, before you know where you have it, you're basically sort of going for instant, all sorts of other areas.
Well, I mean, I feel like that's a whole other show.
I do have one other controversial moment that actually one of my students, Kerry Pike, Fagan, actually brought up with the process. And Jane, I'm turning directly to you about this. Cookies in third place in terms of favourite accompaniment. Big concern here in terms of, surely a cookie is too large to dunk. What is your view? I'm suggesting maybe break it in two. Any thoughts on that?
Yes, I understand. I don't dunk very often myself, but I understand that you've got to get the timing just right where the biscuit has soaked up just enough tea to soften it, but not let the biscuit fall in crumbs, wet crumbs, into your cup of tea. That is really, you know, you don't want that to happen. But whatever people want to do, I would say do it and enjoy it and make tea special focus in your life. It's so very rewarding.
So Jane, clearly you're going for a laissez-faire approach to the dunking side of things, with Victoria Sponge, lemon drizzle and cookies being in third place. Okay, Ian, briefly back to yourself again. How can people find out more about Smile Train UK online, please?
Thanks, Alex. So yeah, the website again, it's smiletrain.org.uk/bigsmarttea party. All the information online there to host your very own Big Smile Tea Party.
And Jane, as Director of Studies at the UK Tea Academy, how can people follow the magical world of Jane Pettigrew, Tea Specialist Extraordinaire?
Oh, thank you very much, Alex. It's uktacademy.co.uk, and we run courses for all sorts of students at all levels. So have a look at the website. It's full of lovely things.
Apparently, I've got a reputation of being a mint tea person, mint tea without any milk whatsoever. So that's a different area entirely. I mean, does that give you any indication in terms of one's character, or is that a case of just don't go there?
Well, when you say mint tea, do you mean fresh mint or mint
peppermint? Flavor? Peppermint tea. Peppermint,
just the leaves of the peppermint.
Yes, plant. Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
That, we don't class that as a tea, but it's very great to drink because it's very good for the digestion and refreshment. It's got a lovely fresh taste. Tea actually comes from the tea plant, which is a camellia. So all the other herbals and infusions, actually, they play a big part in the market, but they're not actually classed officially as tea.
Tea. So actually, I'm not really having tea at present, really.
Which not is, really having tea at all.
Makes perfect sense. Brilliant. Jane Pettigrew, tea specialist, historian and writer, and of course, Ian Valance, director of Smile Train UK. Keep on smiling and keep on taking the tea.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Everything all right in there?
Trying to have a private moment?
My bad. It's not that private, though. How you doing?
Yeah, good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Cool. It's Dom, right? I'm Yaz.
That's me. Gonna meet my ex for the first time since the breakup.
And you're still calling it the breakup.
I thought we were fine. We were better than fine. We moved in together, but we had Hamilton tickets.
It's a serious commitment.
Why?
So, what happened?
She cheated on me with my best friend.
You cheated on Tom? With him?
Oh, that hurts a little bit.
I mean, I get it. The arms are nice, but what did she even talk about?
Are you just going to sit there and say that to me?
Well, she said my arms are nice.
I went through the same sort of thing not too long ago.
She was his life coach. Apparently, she opened his mind. I mean, her legs.
All of her underwear looks like this. Seriously, you'd have to sew, like, 15 of these together to get the pants I'm wearing right now. The worst part, I left my favourite record at his place.
Let's go find a record shop right now and I'll buy you a new copy.
But I don't want a new copy. I want my copy. He must have changed the locks. Like, I'm gonna break in.
Someone must have a key for Jules' gaff.
I'll keep them chatting. You look for the key.
Room for one more?
What the hell do you think you're doing?
No, I wasn't,
Denise! I just caught this boy going through your knicker drawer.
What have you done?
Sometimes you just gotta see what happens. Just go where the breeze takes you. Oh my God.
Are you sure you're down for this?
Yeah.
By the way, your man swiped me on Tinder like a week ago.
No, I didn't. I didn't swipe you.
Give me your phone.
Or anybody.
Now.
Well, we've just heard the trailer, of course, to Rye Lane. We'll talk about Rye Lane in a few moments. But before then, of course, let's find out if Jane Pettigrew's right. How do people actually take their tea? Do they put the milk in first? Do they put the water in first? Do they not take tea at all? Natasha, in Australia, are you a keen tea participant?
I am, but I only have non-caffeinated teas. So generally I tend my tea of choice is probably a ginger tea. So I don't really want milk to be messing anywhere near that.
You see, this is the challenge. I mean, even from my own perspective, the peppermint tea has apparently now been classified by Jane Pettigrew as not a tea at all, really. That's not real tea. I know, equally bemused. I mean, when we're talking about teas, clearly there could really only be one sweet tea. Isn't that right, Jessica Burtis?
Of course. I mean, I do like the hot teas, you know, the herbal teas that I've embraced over here, but I'll always be loyal to sweet tea.
Yeah, I would hope so too. Oliver Stanley, do you know what sweet tea is? Or has that not transcended into your experiences yet as a postgraduate student at the University of Lincoln?
My tea experience is very much even sub Starbucks. It's just English breakfast tea, milk, water, then milk.
Yeah,
water. I've not been very adventurous ever since I tried green tea once, and only once.
Right. I mean, white tea, as I frequently said, is the most transcendental of all of the supposed healthy teas. I'm still to be convinced that white tea isn't simply boiling water, but that's just another line entirely. For another perusal. Jessica, we gather you're en route to a cow location in Ireland. Whereabouts is that cow location? Where are you heading off to?
Yes, that's true. I'm on the bus. It left exactly at 11:30. So I'm going to Louth Village. So it's a little tiny farming village. And we're going to see some cows. So there's some baby cows. So I'm very, very excited to pet a cow.
Absolutely. You might even say calves if they're baby cows. But, you know, it's just all crazy in so many ways there. So wondrous. I mean, this has actually raised the bar so much that I felt I had to put the York Maze up behind me with, of course, their incarnation a few years ago of Harry Potter, which hopefully you'll check out again as the whole thing develops. But Richard Fitzwilliams, you surely should be able to actually address this thing that we've been debating heavily over the last few moments. Jane Pettigrew, scholar in tea. Do you put the milk in first or the water, or do you not take tea? What's your thought, Richard?
I use tea bags. I don't use milk. So I'm afraid.
That answers that. And tea bags cannot be actually entered as such into the tea connoisseur scenario. Never mind.
If I did have milk, it would go in last.
Fine. That's okay. Well, that seems to be pretty much the accepted routine, although there is a significant number of people who prefer to put the milk in first. Jessica, whilst you're on the coach, before Richard starts dissecting the joys of Rye Lane and Alleluia, would you like to share with us, and indeed for the benefit of Oliver, Richard, possibly Natasha, actually, and certainly any listener who might be unaware of what sweet tea is, what exactly is sweet tea?
Yes. So sweet tea is basically, if I can explain it the easiest way, it's black tea that's been cooled and has a ton of sugar dumped into it. And it sounds weird, but it tastes amazing. It is so good. You drink it cold with ice, and it's what every Southerner drinks. Just, we don't drink water. We just drink sweet tea in the South. It's just, it's amazing. It's addictive. But I mean, like, peppermint tea has grown on me a lot. So now I have to work a bit more to make tea here. I don't have my mom to make the sweet tea for me. So.
Well, this is true. And once again, Jessica, as the contributor of the year for 2022, you're still raising that bar, because there are many people who would say, well, if I'm actually en route on a coach, I can't possibly do a Zoom link. But again, you're proving it. You're there. So take that, Sarah Huntley, as you head off with your brother to Tenerife. You know, Jessica's proven that you can actually do this. We send best wishes to Kathy, who's a bit poorly at present, but hopefully she'll be getting better fairly soon, which is all good. Richard, Rye Lane is a place that I used to kind of always encounter the original start of these radio shows back in the 1980s, where I used to travel using the number 37 bus heading into Peckham, off to Dulwich, of course. It would go through Clapham Junction, all those things. Of course, Peckham Rye was there. So why have you brought us full circle to actually talk about the movie Rye Lane today?
Well, this is the sort of movie that we need because it's imaginative, its cameras are active in showing various individuals in different poses. You've also got some deliciously subversive take on contemporary art. You've got what I would say was a contemporary version of Notting Hill, a film I was very, very fond of with Hugh Grant and Julia Roberts, which is quite a long time ago now. And it's set in the, or mainly in the Black British community in Peckham and Brixton. And the opening shot gives you an idea of how deliciously subversive this movie actually is, because you can have a lot of fun in the rom-com. And the opening shot, it might not appeal to you, Alex, I have to say, but there is an overhead shot of various gender-neutral lavatories at an art exhibition. Now, how about that?
I mean, well, again, you know where I'm going to go with respect to this, Richard. Any movie with bodily functions and toiletries, with a few very notable exceptions, not good at all, really, but never mind.
Well, we meet two highly likable characters. Yes, played by Vivian O'Para, and Dom, played by David Johnson. Now, they're completely different as individuals, as different types. I mean, David is the rather sensitive, the introvert, and Yaz is the extrovert. She's colourful, she's energetic, she's dynamic. And they wander around the multicultural areas of Peckham and Brixton. And indeed, just to give you a flavour of this movie, they meet again in the exhibition after we met them initially in the Loos, and they walk through Rye Lane Market. There's a connection between them. But they've also got something in common. They both had breakups recently. Yaz has got through hers, she's the sort of character who can. But Dom is actually going to see his ex-girlfriend, and it just so happens, it just shows one of the dangers of the social media. Of course, when you post, you can post something embarrassing, and his ex-girlfriend became an ex when she put a post up and he spotted his best friend in a compromising position in it. Well, he's a shy guy. When he meets them, he's sort of chatting away. And then Yaz joins them because she pretends to be Dom's girlfriend and completely throws the others. It's absolutely hilarious. And this movie is photographed so beautifully in these fabulous colours. The camera work is imaginative. You have all sorts of things to celebrate here. And, you know, it's a real London love story with its ups and downs. As I say, they're very, very different characters. And also you've got a lot of weirdly dressed and eccentric extras. You've also got Colin Firth in a cameo. He must be careful of doing too many cameos. We see him too seldom, I think, in roles such as The King's Speech and other movies. I mean, it's good fun to see him. And this is a love letter to London, to parts of London. The director, Rain Alan Miller, knows well. Romantic comedy drama, well scripted. Plenty of imagination, as I say, in the way it's shot. Really wonderful colours and two very likeable leads who, you know, they go to the restaurants, the galleries, the bars. You get a feel of parts of London, and I thoroughly enjoyed this movie and I would recommend it.
And obviously Peckham known for more than just the Del Boy and Only Fools and Horses scenario, which is a whole different scenario setup. Natasha, is this one for you? Will it make you feel nostalgia for that part of Britain which you're no longer part of?
It was an interesting, it's taken me through a couple of emotions. So I've only seen the trailer. The opening scene was, they opened the trailer, I imagine, with the same scene they opened the movie with the sort of the overhead sort of lavatory scene. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, right. Well, this is going to be artsy and dull, isn't it?
It's like, more the loos as opposed to the Louvre, perhaps.
Yes. But actually, as it got through the trailer, I became more and more hooked as the personalities, I think, of the characters came through. It really sold it to me. And by the scene with the knicker drawer, I was completely there. It seems like it's a very sort of classic kind of... The love story feels like it's been done before in a number of different ways. But at the same time, from what I've seen in the trailer, it does feel very fresh. And I think that is because of the vibrancy of the characters and some of the humor and stuff that in the modern twist that they've given it. So I would definitely see this movie. It's right up my alley.
Jessica Burtis, is this one for you? Is it a case of how quaint those British people and their obsession with toilets?
I think so. I agree with Natasha. It seems very artistic. I'd say it's not a movie I would usually search out because I tend to like more like fantasy shows or sci-fi. But I just went to London for the first time after being in the airport like a million times. So I feel like I need to watch a film that would have some of London in it. And it does seem very cute.
There you go. And did you manage to see The Quiet Girl as yet from last week?
I haven't yet. I was working on my dissertation proposal, but I am planning on it really soon before April's over.
Well, as I say, I did, as promised last week, screen it to my level, well, actually my postgraduate students. And Oliver, in fact, you're doing pretty much, Oliver, now your pose, for the benefit of the listener, is you're holding your chin to prevent crying occurring, which was, I think, what you actually said you had to do when you were watching The Quiet Girl last week, just to actually cope with the emotional overwhelming nature of their final closing scenes.
Well, actually, to stop myself from crying, it's always been on the side of the eye. That's my tell. But that film was fantastic. Very heavy at certain points. And kind of...
There was only one of your colleagues who found it sort of too crass, basically, and suddenly switched off, proving that he might have sociopathic tendencies. But
it would have been sadder if she died.
It would have been better had she actually died. Yeah, but
yeah,
still.
That's you're making this up.
Oliver is my witness. You know, in the group, in the class, etc. It was there. Still, moving on, Rye Lane, is that something for you?
Absolutely, since I first saw the trailer. Yeah, I love the modern rom-com thing of taking the British awkwardness and then adding in the awkward situations that older rom-coms didn't have.
And like Tinder, for instance.
A wonderful, inelegant reflection of the modern relationship. Mm.
Okay, so Richard, are you going to go for a 9 for this, or are you going to push it even further?
I'll go for 10 because this is a joyous movie. It's such fun.
Well, there you have it. Okay, let's move on to a movie in which, if you were being very scathing and very objective and realistic about the whole thing, you'd say, well, you could actually have a little lottery in terms of how many of the cast will actually still be with us in 5 years' time. I'm just saying, you know, because you have got a fairly elderly cast there, David Bradley, even Generous Orders. We don't know when our number could be up. Perhaps you'd say hallelujah or not. Richard?
Well, it's a cheerful thought, Alex. Actually, the Beth is an old people's home. And at one time, there's one scene, it's very funny, actually, when a couple bring in a very elderly relative. They want to keep her alive because they're about to inherit a home, but she's got to live for 7 years under the law. And one of them asks, what's the survival rate? Well, it's when you're in your 90s. I mean, there's an inevitability about these things. This is directed by Richard Eyre, and it's based on Alan Bennett's play. And it's curious as to precisely what how one describes this film. It's a sort of part drama, part black comedy, and part polemic. Bennett believes the National Health Service is under threat. You actually get a polemic in part of this film about how good it is. I wouldn't have thought that necessary because the film speaks for itself, except that it's also a bit of a thriller. This is very uneven. Firstly, the Beth, the much-loved local Bethlehem Hospital in the north, is threatened with closure owing to government cuts to NHS funding. We meet the dedicated Dr. Valentine, played by Bally Gill, who's devoted to his parents, and also the hyper-efficient Sister Alma Gilpin, played by Jennifer Saunders, who's about to get a medal for her work. And there's a local TV crew who are invited to help volunteers or film volunteers who are wanting to save the Beth, and also very significant to this rather curious story, they're filming all the inhabitants of or the elderly people in the Beth to get their stories or their take on it and so forth, also some of the staff. And then we meet a bit of a comic character, not very convincing, a consultant to the Health Secretary, Colin Coleman, played by Russell Tovey, who arrives to assess the hospital, which he wants to close, and visit his father, a cantankerous, homophobic, because he's gay, ex-miner, played by David Bradley. Then there's one of the residents, Mary, played by Judi Dench, very quiet, just wants to film things on her iPad. What, I wonder, might her film produce? A frail, incompetent woman, Molly, played by Eileen Davies, who I mentioned earlier, is admitted. Her relatives are particularly keen to keep her alive. However, she happens to die. And as Colin reconnects with his estranged father, so there are aspects of this movie, we have to be careful of spoilers, which certainly are very, very surprising, that emerge. There's also Derek Jacobi as Ambrose, a linguist, rather a fine performance. There's some very good jokes in it. It's got an excellent cast. You do wonder, it's obvious what the film's trying to say about the NHS and about care, and also there are quite a number of films that have taken individuals in the twilight of their lives and looked back in nostalgic ways and reminisced and so forth. There are strange aspects of this movie, I have to say. You do have to be careful. I can only say that it's a very uneven mix. It's also full of a few cliches. There are a lot of laughs, but it is, despite very good performances, especially by David Bradley, who's always absolutely excellent. I remember seeing him in No Man's Land, the Harold Pinter play. In fact, I'd say all the cast do what's expected of them pretty well. There are characters, as I mentioned, the consultant who wants to close it is obviously caricatured. And quite frankly, even if if you go to the opera with the health secretary and he and his wife are dressed formally, don't turn up in a shirt that's designed for the beach. That sort of silly detail I just mentioned. It's a very curious movie, this. There's plenty of fun to be had, and there's a good deal more than that. So it's curious what one ultimately makes of it. I can say I was glad I saw it, and it has sufficient in it for me to enjoy. But it's not necessary to have lectures in movies which are supposed to give or messages in more subtle ways. And yes, there's a very odd twist in it.
21st century versions of the Ealing comedies, perhaps. If you like The Duke, maybe you might like Alleluia. Let's go to Oliver. Any thoughts on this one? Is it one that you feel might be appealing, or is it a case of no? Wide berth, please, because in 20,000 days, I myself will be in my 80s.
Separate thought. I've seen the trailer and I've watched, I've read a review of this, and I think the general consensus of the one review I've read, so it's not really general consensus. There's too much going on in the film. So it's
too much going on.
Yeah, it's one I'll probably watch, but that will be when it shows up on a streaming service that my mum can figure out the menu of. And
when you get access to streaming services, of course, you know, these are all challenges about that. Yeah. And indeed, we have to sort of say again, in terms of rewards for Oliver, he was actually the sole person who managed to fulfill my brief that I gave of actually submitting the review for The Quiet Girl within 24 hours. Still waiting for the others, but never mind. You made it, Oliver, so well done. The others missed the deadline, which, as Natasha would said, fatal when you're actually in journalism.
Yeah. Classic rookie error.
Thankfully, it's all just formative assessment, not necessarily summative assessment. Otherwise, they would be problematized about that whole thing. Anyway, Natasha, hallelujah.
Yeah, so this one for me was the opposite of the last one. So when I started watching the trailer for Rye Lane, I was like, and then it got better and I got more into it as it went along. This one, I started off really excited. I adore the Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. That is one of, I love that movie so much. It's very beautiful. It's very sincere, but it's funny at the same time. And I just, you know me, if I'm not crying, I've not gone to the cinema.
Just hold your sort of temple.
Oliver is clearly a very controlled and he's very good at regulating. I just sob. But no, so I was thinking, oh, great. Like, this is going to be a similar vein. And I sort of watched it and I can get where Oliver's coming from, maybe from the review he's read. It does seem to be a bit kind of that because there seems to be so much. I don't know. My brain just sort of went meh and then just started to lose a little bit of interest. That might be because obviously with trailers, they've obviously got to pack them with as much as possible and you don't get the chronological order of events, et cetera, et cetera. There were still some interesting moments, but it's not massively made me want to watch it compared to Rye Lane. So I will probably be far more likely to see that in the cinema and maybe check out Hallelujah on a streaming service at some point.
Jessica, allowing for the fact that obviously in the United States they don't believe in the National Health Service, and quite rightly so, they do their own thing. If you haven't got the money, you're just going to die. Why would you go into an old folks home? That's bottom line on that system. Although, of course, they do exist. Jessica, is this one for you, or is it a case of no? Even though Hallelujah is a nice Easter phrase, I'll probably miss it.
Again, it's not really a film that I would have chosen for myself, but I like to give the films on this more of a chance. So I think
if only for Richard, really.
I think I'll give it a chance. I do think the subject of like elderly care is so interesting to kind of see portrayed in films, because it is such a controversial thing with how a lot of elderly people just aren't treated very well in that kind of care. So I think maybe it can start a discussion a little bit more.
Yeah, fair point. And just out of interest, now you've been on the road for about 23 minutes. How far are you from, obviously, seeing the first cows?
I am about 45 minutes away. It's actually really pretty out here. There's like horses and grassy fields and farms. And it's so
islands,
pretty.
Jessica. What do you expect? It's islands. You know?
It's beautiful. green, of course.
Exactly. And once again, you know, there are people who actually go to Rome, they'll go to Paris, etc. They won't actually take the whole notion of the mobile and take us around. That's the global village, Richard. Anyway, 8 out of 10, I suspect you might go, oh, would it be lower? It would be 6, I think. It might be a 6 for the Wonders of Hallelujah.
Try again, Alex.
Oh, 7.
Yes.
There you go. Somewhere between the two side of things. Okay, so we move on from thence to Greek mythology and the daughter of Aeetes, niece of Circe and granddaughter of the sun god Helios. Can only be another Greek tragedy. It's Medea. What about this one that you've recently just seen on stage, Richard?
Yes, Euripides, Medea and adapted. A very interesting production. I would recommend this theatre. It's Soho Place and it's a new theatre. It's just next door to Tottenham Court Road Tube Station, absolutely jam-packed. And they've chosen a venue where they can have very, very bright floodlit posters, which I think is a tremendous advantage too, just to spread the word. I mean, it is a very unusual production because you have Medea, you have the fact she's in Corinth and she's being expelled with her children by Jason. Now, this is Jason of the Argonauts, if you know your Greek mythology, and she marries Jason, but Jason has spurned her and marrying the daughter of Creon, who rules Corinth. She's been invited by Aegeus to Athens, but first, what will she do when spurned as she is in a venomous patriarchy? She has Jason's children. Something terrible is going to happen. Now, we know what happens. What stays with me is the fact that Sophia Canedo's performance as Medea, this is someone who, the first part, she is absolutely battered by Creon's decision that she leave, Jason's rejection of her. But this is a calculated act, what she decides to do with her children. And that, it's a slow burner, really. A lot stays with you after the production, as it should. I mean, the range, the best Medea I ever saw, and I do have to say it relied on a terrifying scene, which opens up. It was Diana Riggs, which was a classic some years ago. This is very powerful. It also involves, whilst Medea comes to terms with what she's planning as revenge, one actor plays four parts. And when he's not playing the different parts, he's wandering in a sort of predatory way or dominant way round the stage. The one disadvantage of this, Ben Daniels, a very good performance as Jason and indeed as Creon, and two other parts, including Aegeus, the king of Athens. The one disadvantage is that it is sometimes difficult to hear. The chorus, the Euripidean chorus, was a device in Greek tragedy. The chorus are situated in the audience and almost inaudible, unfortunately. Also, if you miss parts of the dialogue, sometimes you're not quite sure what's happening, of course, and that motivates somewhat against giving this the mark it would normally deserve. It is a very powerful play, and Sophia Canedo is excellent, and Ben Daniels too. But as I say, the device of one man, I've never seen this before on stage, I have to say, one man playing four parts, all the male parts played by this one character. Yes, most of the time it does succeed, but it is, and the last time as I was at this theatre, one of the actors was communicating in sign language, and we saw the dialogue floodlit above the stage. Frankly, it would have been a great advantage to this play if the same had happened, just to inform us, to make absolutely certain that we didn't miss anything. But having said that, when someone plots for the most terrifying revenge imaginable, Sophia Canedo certainly gives this impression that this is something calculated, that this is something indeed that she is absolutely prepared to do and go through with. Very strong performance, indeed. And I saw her as Cleopatra, but I only saw Antony and Cleopatra, which is very insubstantial on not particularly well shot video. So this is the first time I've seen her in a really dramatic role, and I look forward to the next. Yes, it's gimmicky, and it's interesting. I'm all for all the gimmicks and all the imagination that director Dominic Cook uses. Certainly a very, word is spreading that this is a production that's certainly a very, very interesting one.
And of course, paving the way for the way in which cutbacks to both the arts and the BBC can be applied, and indeed education. One person does the work of four other individuals. which is something we're used to as a matter of course. Natasha, Medea, something which you think, yeah, that might be of interest.
I mean, I love Greek mythology. It's amazing. If anyone ever wants to get into it, I suggest Stephen Fry's books. They're like a really beautiful gateway. I will always and forever bang on about them. Interesting character. She's quite controversial, isn't she? I'm not sure. I'd like to see a play, I think, about her. I'm not sure I'd necessarily be on her side or like her, but it would be interesting to see that portrayal of her. My only issue is I've got really terrible hearing. So I think I would probably have a similar problem to Richard. I would want there to be some sort of, if the speaking wasn't clear, which is criminal, it should be if it's a live performance, then I would want that sort of floodlit sort of writing and speech as Richard suggested. I think that would be a really beautiful idea. So yeah, that might put me off a bit. I'd have to see how it went.
Requiring subtitles, clearly. Jessica, what about yourself?
I would absolutely love to see this, and I really want to see a Greek play at some point in person. Agamemnon will always be my favorite, but maybe I end up liking Medea a lot. I haven't seen it before, so I think it'd be really nice. I'd love to see this.
Okay. And Oliver, are you into your Greek mythologies?
Yes, but I know shamefully little about it. So I think I would enjoy watching this play. And the idea of the all the male roles being played as one predatory figure does seem like an interesting technique they've used.
It's a brutal patriarchy in those days. One of the things that one of the characteristics of this play is that Medea is constantly talking to and appealing to women. And it's in that way that we understand or start to understand what she's planning, why she's planning it.
They're the product of an institution which is moribund and shouldn't exist anymore. The words of Brian Cox when talking about the royal family, and specifically Harry and Meghan. Yes, Richard, you may well say that, which is one of the reasons why I have to ask you the question. Have you been eagerly checking out the courts? Because obviously it's nice to see that wonderful Prince Harry has been back in Britain to go head to head with the press once again.
Well, firstly, he didn't have to come. Secondly, the reason, or one of the reasons he came, was that, and this is a case against the Mail, Associated Newspapers. I mean, the point, it's somewhat complicated. Aspects of this case date back to 1993. It's mainly between 93 and 2011, but there is part of this that also apparently extends to 2018. Phone hacking, various intrusions by the press in the private lives of very well-known figures. They include Baroness Lawrence, Elton John, and his husband, David Furnish, Elizabeth Hurley, Sadie Frost, and others. So the Sussexes, or Prince Harry, is certainly in good company, and the others turned up. The problem with this case, it could go on for quite some time. The phone hacking, the Leveson inquiry, what happened to the News of the World, and so on, you're going back about 12 years. Whether this will happen again in any form or whatever, we'll have to wait and see to the judgment. However, Harry did attack the royal family, saying that it was their policy to keep out of court and they were against the action against phone hacking. Facts simply are, as we move towards the coronation, we also have another case. Now, this is Harry's case against Mirror Group newspapers, and it's been chosen to begin on the 9th of May. That is, in fact, just after the coronation. It may
Richard, you know the whole secret of good public relations. It's like comedy, all in the timing. So it's always nice to see the fun things that take place with respect to that, which is so true. But sadly, as Harry would have wished, we do not have sufficient time to talk about his dad's recent trip to Germany. That's okay. As we said, I'm sure there'll be other things happening. And of course, in a tribute, of course, to the fact that Jessica will be seeing cows, though possibly not cows wearing jumpers. I've decided to obviously sort of engage my inner bovine nature to actually sort of see that mixed up with the leprechauns and the shamrocks, etc., going over there, it'll be worth it. How far have you got to go, Jessica, before you reach the first sight of cows in Ireland?
We have, I'd say, about half an hour, maybe. So we're close, and I am so excited.
May I ask, Jessica, what the particular interest in cows is?
I've never gotten to pet a cow before, but I just think they're so cute. So I'm just excited to go see an Irish farm with cows, because of all the Irish people I know, I'm like, you live near a sheep farmer. Do you know the sheep farmer? Can I pet the sheep? And no one knows any farmer, but I finally get to pet a cow. I'm very excited.
This is a historic day, and we salute you, Jessica, and we wish you all the very best as far as that is concerned. But for the moment, for Oliver Stanley, to Natasha Wanton, to Richard Fitzwilliams and Jessica Burtis, huge thanks. And before we actually head off to speak to another fine American soul, he used to be a BT executive. He's now set up his own internet company called Rebel Internet. That's Tucker George. We'll utter those immortal words. Keep watching the movies.
We're here for your first cry, for your last breath. We are love itself.
This isn't just a hospital.
That's wonderful, Mary. Think sunshine.
It's the Beth, and the Beth is the people.
Gorgeous Gerald, the physio, will be paying us a call.
Oh, that's it. I'm definitely wearing my shorty nightie.
There's a camera crew here helping us to save the Beth.
This is chipped.
No wonder the government are going to close you down.
Fiver a strip to win a week in Cleethorpes.
Oh, you can sponsor me to do a skydive.
Do you know, you've a lovely manner with her.
I like old people.
Rubbish. Even old people don't like old people.
The patients, without the Beth, I don't like to think where they will have to go.
There was something about books that excited me. Marginalia. The little notes readers write at the edges of the page.
The patients pushed to the margins, doomed to be rubbed out.
You've gone far, Colin.
All I can think of to say is, don't leave it too late to die.
Neville, tell him about your life.
I used to work in a factory. I had 10 men under me.
So did I on a good day. It's my heart.
We're fighting for our right to care.
We're engaged.
Yo, stop it off.
First, I'm going to take your trousers off.
Bet you said that a few times.
Okay, no interest in your penis.
We do the things that have had to be done since the world was young. I have cared.
We're here for your first cry, for your last breath. We will be here when you are old.
We are love itself, and for love, there is no charge.
Now, you may be listening to this particular interview via a podcast. You might be listening to it via your portable computer, your device, all sorts of things, etc. Either way, you're probably making use of broadband. And who's paying for it? Well, it would seem that there's another broadband tax, a stealth tax indeed, that's due to actually hit nearly 19 million households as the days turn into April and more, and that's going to cost us about £13.4 billion. I'll say that again, £13.4 billion. So how can we actually address this? What's behind it? Well, we're delighted to actually welcome a former BT executive who should know what he's talking about, who actually founded Rebel Internet. That's Tucker George. How are you, Tucker?
I'm great. How are you, Alex?
I'm great, but a little bit shocked by this finding that suggests that actually this rise is the equivalent to petrol jumping to more than 170 pence per litre overnight, £10 per tank at every refill. That's not good for the information superhighway.
No, it's horrible. It's shocking. And so when you think about in the time of crisis that we are as a nation and a cost of living crisis, big broadband pushing through a 14.4% price increase is just appalling.
I mean, is it a case of, you know, suddenly the costs of the actual data packages are suddenly sort of shot up? Is there a thing that we're not being told about? Or is it just a case of they want to make money, more profits from us?
The problem is they use the inflation to what I think greenwash, and we call it greed inflation, is basically they trick the average consumer to think that because there's inflation, they should put some money on top, which actually goes straight to corporate profits. So instead of just increasing the price by inflation, which was just over 10%, they add their profit on top of 4%. And now the average customer is paying over 14% more next year for the broadband. That's £77 out of a family's pocket for the next 12 months. It's just unfair.
Yeah, and indeed, this is something which is an essential. I mean, we've spoken about this many times, that nearly half of the UK population are working from home either some or all of the time. That means 3 to 4 days a week working from home. I'll be working from home effectively next week for the next week or so before getting back to campus. You know, those are costs that effectively, you know, we have no choice. We have to pay, presumably.
We depend on our home internet more than we ever have before. Whether it is home working, home learning, everybody now depends on an entire ecosystem of being connected in their home. So home broadband and a great Wi-Fi connection is not an option. It's a requirement. And so everybody needs to have this great connection. But not only is the connection not good, you're now getting overcharged and you're exploited. And so it just feels like people are taking advantage of customers throughout the nation, and somebody needs to do something about it.
Which is one of the reasons why you founded or co-founded Rebel Internet. So, Tucker, would you like to talk to us about Rebel Internet and how that might just be a hopeful savior of the future as far as the web's concerned?
Absolutely. I'd love to. And, you know, we really built Rebel in contrast to how we view big broadband taking advantage of customers. And so we start with, what's the problem? And the problem is customers are misled with marketing. They're trapped in long-term contracts. And then they never get the service or the actual home Wi-Fi experience they need. So we did the opposite. So we said, we're going to be fair and transparent. We're going to tell it how it is. We're not going to do superlative fiber broadband and confuse customers. We're just going to say we have great broadband and a great Wi-Fi service. Oh, no contract periods, because our product's great and our customer service teams are fantastic. So we don't need to trap you into long-term contracts. And we don't do above inflation price increases. In fact, in 2023, given the cost of living crisis, we did no price increases for any of our customers, because we want to treat our customers with respect. And we know if we do that, we're going to change the relationship between providers, Rebel Internet, and average Brits.
When you were a BT executive, was this something which, in essence, you would have thought? I mean, did you kind of, was it a part of you which saying this is not just not quite right? Basically, was that kind of part of the motivation for saying there needs to be a different way, there needs to be a better way and a fairer way?
That's exactly right. So when we looked at my last job, was I ran the transformation of BT, basically trying to make it a better company. Mm. And we did that. The first thing I did was I started with a customer. And so we interviewed customers and we looked at all the customer feedback and we tried to figure out, why does BT have a 1.3 star Trustpilot? You know, something must be wrong. And when you talk to customers, you just realize everything's wrong, whether it's the product, whether it's the billing's wrong, whether your Wi-Fi cuts out, or you just don't feel respected with the way that the price increases are deployed or hidden fees. So I kind of looked at this and I said, this seems to be a systemic failure. So we need to change the whole thing. You can't just change one thing. You need to change the whole market.
So allowing for that, how can people who are listening to this are saying, yeah, this sounds great, but how do we actually get connected with Rebel Internet? And do we have any problems with respect to our current internet service provider?
Absolutely. So if anybody's interested in learning more, I invite you to www.rebelinternet.uk. You can go to our website. You can always engage us by email, or we have a 24/7 call and email service. Whatever time you need, we'll be there. And we'd love to talk to you more about our products and services.
Is this something that's unique to Britain? I mean, we've known over years that effectively when it comes to customer satisfaction, we don't score hugely in terms of areas relating to that. I mean, and it's just a case of, well, you know, there's a passive market there. We could just exploit them as much as we wish, and they just won't complain. They'll just pay up and grumble, and that's it.
You know, I think the fat cats might believe that they're going to get away with treating customers with disrespect, but I think those days are gone, and that's what I'm betting on. I think customers have a huge need, and they're now standing up for their rights, and they want to be respected by their providers, and they want a trust-based relationship. And I don't think they're going to deal with the same nonsense they've been dealing with for the past two decades. So I think people want to change.
Well, as indeed you were quoted as saying, Tucker, broadband is broken in more ways than one. Hopefully Rebel Internet is part of the way to actually go to fix that whole side of things there. Just a reminder, can you share with us once again the web address to go to for people who actually want to find out more about Rebel Internet?
Absolutely. Come visit us at www.rebelinternet.uk.
And indeed, it's been a delight sharing some thoughts with you, good self. Tucker George, founder of Rebel Internet, huge thanks. And hopefully we can speak again soon when maybe the rebels will take over the internet ecosphere.
Absolutely. Thanks, Alex.
I love you so.